Hello, everyone. AC Jimbo here. Do you know, there's an awful lot of football podcasts out there, and I do mean an awful lot. But when you've listened to as many of them as I have, then there's times when you find yourself thinking, Arsenal again? Bundesliga again? Serie A? Seriously? Well, what about your Gillinghams? Or is it Gillingham? Your Exeters and your Leedses? What about what they call real football, the stuff they round up on Channel 5, apparently, really late at night? Well, that's why we've launched the Totally Football League Show, to round up all of that action, passion, and all of those stories. You're getting the first episode on this feed, but you can subscribe right now on Audioboom, iTunes, and everywhere else you get your podcasts. It's Totally Football League, and it's totally free, and we're putting out a brand new show every Tuesday. I'll be back with more Totally Football Show later in the week, but for now, take it away, Ian McIntosh.
Hello, I'm Ian McIntosh, and welcome to the show that I wanted to host so badly. I engineered a bitter schism in the podcasting world just to establish a structure in which it could survive. This week, as Aston Villa appear to turn the corner, Birmingham wrench their driver from the wheel. We speak to a man who's managed both of them. Don't be just another Leeds United-obsessed Football League show, you begged us on Twitter. Well, okay then. We'll talk about the team that beat them this weekend instead. And it's happy days over at St James's Park. No, not that one. The other one. And what's Pep up to? And again, not that one. The other one. Because this is the Totally Football League Show. Ah, exciting this. The lengths a Southend United supporter will go to just to get some decent coverage, eh? And it's not just limited to Southend either, this show. We'll need you to get in touch with us. We'll talk about more of that later, but for now, know this. You don't have to follow anyone new on Twitter. At The Totally Show is where we are. You don't have to follow anyone new on Facebook either. At The Totally Football Show is us there. But if you do like the show, you can subscribe on iTunes and other portals. And don't forget to like, rate, review, or, you know, just tell a friend about us. But that is enough of that. The Totally Football League Show is all about the stories, and we have some excellent people in the studio to tell these stories. Every week until, in the words of Lieutenant Radcheck from Starship Troopers, he dies or I find someone better, we've got Matt Stanger. Matt, hi.
Hello, Ian.
You're a Blackburn Rovers fan, aren't you? How's that working out for you?
We said we're not going to discuss their result this week.
Oh, God, it begins already. Matt is the editor of the Set Pieces as well. You'll be able to find a bit of crossover content with stuff from the show on that website, so give them a follow as well. We are also delighted to be joined by a man who, as we said at the top, has managed both Birmingham and Aston Villa, and he played a bit as well. It's Alex McLeish. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
You watch quite a lot of Football League games, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I try and cover most of the games, everything at the weekend. In terms of the highlights, certainly try and get to championship games within London or across London, and sometimes even further down the country. And in fact, you mentioned St James's Park, and I know you meant not that one, but I met Paul Tisdale in the summer, and I said I would come down and see a game if it was okay, and he's invited me, so it'll be good to see Paul's team playing, because he's doing very well.
He's doing all right. Well, we'll talk a lot more about that later, but we are going to start in the Championship for obvious reasons. Let's have a look at the rest of the league, though. Leeds. What on earth happened with Leeds? They lost 1-0 to Millwall, that's what. Six consecutive clean sheets down the pan. They are still top, though, nudging ahead of Mendes Hampton Wanderers on goal difference. They beat Forest 2-1. Early pace setters Cardiff, they're down to third after salvaging a draw at home to Sheffield Wednesday. Last minute Sol Bamba equaliser there. And Preston's win over Birmingham takes Alex Neil's side to fourth. Best result of the weekend has to be Burton Albion, who beat Fulham 2-1, albeit by virtue of an iffy penalty. But an honourable mention to Bristol City, they battered Derby 4-1. There was a draw between relegated and not going back up again clubs Hull and Sunderland, a fine win for Borough over QPR, and a first away win of the season for Norwich over Sheffield United. But it's the Midlands that dominates this week. Alex, we knew that Harry Redknapp was having problems at Birmingham. Did you expect him to go this quickly?
No, certainly not. It was a real surprise. But another surprise was Harry seemed to kind of go tamely. You know, it was almost as if there was some mutual agreement or something, that, you know, rather than a big shock sacking. So that's only reading between the lines. I don't really know where, you know, what the real chat was between both of them when Harry finally left.
As a manager, is there ever a time when something like that almost feels like a relief?
Yeah. Definitely. And then all of a sudden, a month or two later, you're twiddling your thumbs again and saying, I need back in. I need, the masochist in you wants you to go back in.
Matt, I watched Birmingham Leeds in midweek and I was actually quite impressed with Birmingham. I thought, you know, that they were beaten, but there was a marked improvement in them, the new players settling in. You watched them at the weekend against Preston. What went wrong?
Well, they looked fairly solid in the first half and obviously they went ahead, but I think, like Harry said after the game, as soon as something goes against them, they start to fall apart pretty quickly because, you know, they still have a bit of a losing mentality from that terrible run last season. And Preston are a decent side as well. You know, Preston are going well, like you said at the start of the show. So, you know, they were ready to capitalise on any kind of doubt in the Birmingham defence.
What about all these new players, though? They brought half the Brentford squad. Was there anyone there on Saturday who stood out?
Well, Maxim Collins stood out because he scored the goal and then also he cocked up terribly for one of Preston's strikes. So he's made a bit of a name for himself already. But the team is still needing to gel, really, and this is why it's so bizarre after, 13 games he's been given a sacking and after signing 14 players in the summer.
Alex, when you were there, life was always interesting behind the scenes. Do you get the impression that it's still similarly idiosyncratic back there?
Well, you really don't know until you go in and you get a piece of it, but at the moment they seem to be in a little bit of free fall. Whether they have a solid idea or where they're going, it remains to be seen. You know, there was a few bobs spent there, and it takes time for a team to gel, and especially when you make wholesale changes and you bring in about eight or nine players at the one time and you try to integrate them into the team.
When you do bring in that number of players in a short space of time, how easy is it to make them gel?
It's very difficult, and until you get evidence that of their mentality, because that division is a lot to do with mentality. You don't have to be the most beautiful player in the world, but if you're a good, solid player who's been around a little bit, I kind of relied on guys like Lee Carsley, who came from the Premier League, Marcus Bent at the time. We were never a beautiful Premier League kind of wannabe team at the time. We built towards that. And, you know, it's a gradual thing. But the one thing I made sure was we had mentality in that team. And Harry's talking about they lose a goal and they crumble. Now, you've got to get them over that and prove to them, let them feel the evidence for themselves that they can handle that.
Matt, was Harry Redknapp on a hiding to nothing when he took this? I mean, wouldn't he have been better just walking away after rescuing him last season?
Yeah, I think that might have been the best idea for him, to be honest, because that could have worked out pretty well for Steve Cotterill, who there's a poll on the Birmingham Mail yesterday who would the fans like to replace Redknapp, and he was actually leading that poll. And Cotterill came in as Redknapp's assistant for the last three games last season, and you know, help with that galvanising effect to keep them in the Championship. And he decided to walk away in the summer, even though he's offered a deal, because, you know, he sees himself as a number one still and he's looking for another managerial opportunity. And now he might walk back in as Redknapp's replacement. So,
well, what about you, Alex? I mean, we know you're
looking
about...
I bet I get a poll going.
would you be interested if they sounded you out?
Well, it would be, I think, stupid not to speak to them. Certainly, you would need to understand the parameters. I've worked mainly in firefighting jobs since coming to England, going across the road to Villa. I had to reduce the wages in one season by quite a substantial amount. And when I see Ronnie Koeman's comments yesterday saying that, they spent $150 million, Josie wound them up a wee bit by saying that they should be going for top four spending that kind of money. But Koeman sees it as a bunch of money that actually makes them stand still. So going back to the Villa experience, dropping wages dramatically certainly doesn't get you up that table.
Yeah, Villa have spent an awful lot of money this season and up until this weekend didn't seem to have done them an awful lot of good. It looked like it would be a race to the sack between Harry Redknapp and Steve Bruce, but it was an outstanding win for Villa, 3-0 away at Barnsley. Alex, do you think Steve Bruce might have turned the corner now? Because it's been a horrible start.
Yeah, a victory can really galvanise the squad. I'm sure that this week's training will be really bubbly at Villa, and the players feeling confident and going about their training in a different manner. Steve slightly changed the tactics at the weekend because he's a learned guy. He's got a lot of experience, and as they say, experience is forever. And he showed, you know, just what he's made of.
It's three clean sheets in a row, six games without defeat. Is that the bedrock it's built on?
Of course it is, yeah, because they were losing goals. Maybe because as Aston Villa, they would be expected to go and attack teams and maybe press them as well. But not the greatest pace at the back. John Terry, the greatest experience, but not the greatest pace. Not just John, but that can leave you vulnerable to very quick centre-forwards, and they have been caught out once or twice up until this juncture, and Steve's maybe found a different way to win a game, and that was a real booster at the weekend.
Well, Matt, you saw the Villa game, and you'll have been impressed with some of the younger players coming through, particularly up front.
Yeah, Keenan Davis really stood out again. He had a great game against Norwich when Villa won 4-2 early in the season, and he led the line again really well at Barnsley on Saturday evening. As Alex said, I think that Villa back line looks pretty solid, but you know they will be tested by pacier forward lines, and I think they played a little bit deeper actually on Saturday and looked to play the ball up to Davis quite early and have players feeding around him. He won the penalty to open scoring and to set up a Adoma, and then scored one himself as well. So yeah, he played very well.
Of course, the thing with Villa is, and this is a developing theme in our conversation this morning, they have a very very vocal chairman, don't they? He's very keen on Twitter. is that helpful in boosting the profile of a club, or as a manager, do you start to fear that sort of thing?
It's kind of Donald Trump-like, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's just a modern-day phenomenon that, it's difficult for me, probably coming, from a different era, to understand why the chairman would want to speak so much. But it's his club, and he can do what he wants. And as long as, I think that it's very, very easy to say something that maybe affects the gaffer, the manager, and I think you just have to be careful what you say, because I had at Birmingham with Karen and the two Davids, they said one or two things towards the end of the season when we were going for promotion, and I said, look, if you can just let me do the football speaking, I'd be much obliged. And we had a good agreement at the end of the season, very amicable, and we went on to get that promotion back to the Premier League.
Well, Aston Villa will have a chance to build on that game. They've got Nottingham Forest, who aren't in a particularly good run of form. They've got them at the weekend. Birmingham, on the other hand, will reacquaint themselves with Gary Rowett, who, of course, was sacked while they were in seventh. I'd imagine he'll have a few things to say.
He'll be motivated.
But after all this doom and gloom in the Midlands, here's some more. The Totally Football Show Live is coming to Birmingham. It's November the 8th. We'll be at the Glee Club. James Richardson will be hosting. We'll have a star-studded panel of guests. Producer Ben will be there. You can get tickets now on glee.co.uk, or you can just go on our Facebook and you'll find all the links there. So do that, please, because it would be lovely to see you. Matt, we literally threw you to the lions. But what was it like? It's not actually that bad, is it?
I absolutely loved it, Ian. I can't wait to go back.
Yeah?
It was a great game to start with. The atmosphere was brilliant. Met loads of lovely fans who were all keen to tell me their thoughts on Millwall's start to the season, which has gone from okay to pretty good now, I think, with that victory. I stopped off at the Millwall Cafe before the game, had a battered sausage, so can't go wrong. And I got a selfie with Zampa the Lion, so I'm not sure if I had quite the typical experience at the Den.
You've ticked a lot of boxes. I've been to the Den. It's fine. The stewards are really friendly as well.
Yeah, there was a little bit of trouble in the first half when Steve Morrison had a goal disallowed for offside, and I think a bottle was yobbed at the linesman. But yeah, apart from that, it was all very friendly.
I'll tell you what, if you do want to know a little bit about Millwall and you get a chance, get Mike Calvin's book, Family. Mike's done lots of great books, but Family is still my favourite. He gets behind-the-scenes access to the club, the kind of thing that Hunter Davis did back in the day. But Millwall, of course, have had bigger things on their mind, haven't they, with the continuing ground controversy that was so well covered by The Guardian's Barney Rone. Are we getting there to that being sorted now?
Not really, Ian. I spoke to Steve Kavanagh, the Millwall CEO. He was telling me that it's still very much an ongoing process that's up in the air at the moment.
We don't want to move. Let's be clear. We've got no desire to move. We want to be here. We feel we're a huge part of the community. And to up and move isn't what we want to do. And the fans will fight that. But if it is absolutely the right thing to do because this has gone ahead, then we would have to do it.
The situation is, in January, the compulsory purchase orders were scrapped by the council ahead of an inquiry that's ongoing at the moment, and he's costing the taxpayer £500,000, by the way. The outcome of that will not be able to decide whether they can go ahead or not, but it will sort of inform people of the council's decision-making process and where this situation stands. There's actually an election at the moment for deciding the Labour candidate in the local mayor elections next year. And Millwall have written to five candidates there for Labour, and four of them have said that they wouldn't support any more CPOs, but the fifth, Paul Maslin, has said that he would still back the CPOs. So there's obviously concern. Renewal on some of the land around the car park, which is the particular piece of land that's in question. And so, there's clearly a lot of interest in this, as Nick Hart from the Acton Millwall podcast called it, a high-value redevelopment opportunity.
Alex, have you seen much of Millwall under Neil Harris?
Watching their promotion success last year was terrific to see. And I think there's a bit of Scottish heritage at Millwall. I think if you look back, there's a wee bit of history there. And one of my good pals, Alec Ray, up in Scotland, ex-Sunderland fame as well, and Wolves, he had a great time at Millwall, and I think he was a top player for them in that era.
Neil Harris, of course, I cannot remember which book I read this in, but his son is a particularly talented footballer who was spotted, I think, about the age of 7 or 8 by a number of Premier League scouts, who then approached Neil and said, let's get him in the academy, to which Neil said, no, he's a kid, let him enjoy his football. If he still wants to do it when he's a teenager, then maybe we'll talk then. I've always quite liked that. But as a football team, Matt, not much said about them. Obviously, they came up through the playoffs. What are they like? Are they going to stay up? Are they going to do more than stay up?
I think they're definitely going to stay up. They play brilliantly against Leeds. I was listening to Nick Hart's podcast after the Norwich game when they won 4-0, and he was saying that they don't look to play that possession style like a lot of teams do in the Championship. Instead, they cut through teams like a freight train, and that's exactly how they played against Leeds on Saturday. They really went for it from the off, and Leeds just looked pretty shell-shocked, to be honest, and Thomas Christiansen, especially in his post-match press conference. Millwall have got this winger down the right, Jed Wallace, who was at Wolves before, and I spoke to a Wolves fan who said that he didn't really work out there. He looked a little bit weak and didn't really settle into the team, and I don't think he was given a huge amount of opportunity as well, but he was just relentless against Leeds. And there was one moment where he went down the right-hand side and Pontus Janssen came across. And Pontus Janssen, obviously linked with a lot of big moves and a lot of big Premier League clubs. And he just made Pontus Janssen look like a Sunday League defender. Just jinked the ball past him, went around, fired in across.
There goes that move.
Matt, I really can't stress how good I thought Leeds were up until this weekend. Every game I've seen them, they've been brilliant. So much individual talent, so much pace, so good on the counter-attack. What happened?
They had one shot, Ian.
One shot?
And it was from Sice, and it must have been 30 yards over the bar. So they didn't really get going at all. They obviously lost Liam Cooper, so they had to make changes before the game. Brought Shaughnessy into central defence. They looked a bit uncertain at the back. And Christiansen tried to make changes throughout the match. At half-time, he made a double change, and he brought on Dallas, who did fairly well down the left. And then the last roll of the dice, with about 20 minutes to go, just before Millwall scored, actually, he took off Sice and he put on J. Roy Grott. So I think they had about 2 6-foot-4 centre forwards and about 400 pounds of striker on the pitch at that point, and yet they didn't really pump it up to them like you thought they would do. And Lasoga, he didn't really play that much towards the back end of his Hamburg spell, and he's come in obviously and played 3 games in a week there, so he looked a bit tired, and I think they need to regroup.
More on the Championship in a bit. Do you want to know what your first cornerstone shave feels like? You know when you've been struggling with a really bad tin opener, and every time you try to open a tin of mushy peas, it's an absolute ordeal? They won't work properly and you get sore fingers, and you end up having to stick those fingers under jagged metal and wrench the lid off just to get your mushy peas out. And then, after months of putting up with it, you buy yourself a brand new tin opener, a really good one, and suddenly everything's quick and easy. It's like opening a tin with a lightsaber.
Cornerstone take all the hassle out of shaving. Let them know how often you defuzz and sign up to one of their plans, and you'll never have to worry about running out of blades ever again, because they'll deliver them right to your door. To get yourself started, head to cornerstone.co.uk/totally. You'll receive a personally engraved razor and 6 super sharp blades for just £4. That's cornerstone.co.uk/totally.
I'm Ian McIntosh, and thanks to Cornerstone, I can eat mushy peas every day. Right, it's time to play Fan League. Have you heard of Fan League, Matt?
Yes, I have, Ian.
Yeah, that's because I briefed you on it earlier today. It's basically like the football pools, but it's on your phone. You get a slip with 13 games, some from the Premier League, some from the Championship, and you pick home win, away win, or draw. That's it. It's easy. The more you get right, the more chance of winning big cash prizes. No one needs any help with their Premier League predictions. We all know all about that. But there might be, you know, might need a little bit of guidance on the Championship. So every week we'll see what we can do. See if we can, you know, help you win some money. First game on the slip from the Championship is Sunderland-Cardiff. Matt, how do you feel about Sunderland-Cardiff?
I think it's going to be a draw, and I think it'll be quite a tight game. Cardiff seem to have gone off a little bit, got a last-minute equaliser at the weekend, whereas Sunderland have got pretty creditable draw away to Hull. So, yeah, I think it's going to be quite a tight one, this.
Yeah, Alex?
I'll go for away win.
Away win?
Yeah, because, I feel Neil Warnock really loves to play against the big teams, and he sets himself up and the team really well for one of those occasions, and this is a massive occasion for him.
What's he like to share a technical area with? Because I've heard he's a bit unpleasant.
Yeah, well, listen, I've never had a problem with Neil, and the head-to-heads we've had in the dugout, always been very amicable before, during and after. There's been no big bust-ups, and yeah, you can be vociferous, but listen, we see Guardiola, we see Conte. I watched them, Man City, Chelsea last year at Stamford Bridge, and the two of them were incessant in that dugout and launching orders at their players and shouting to the other side of the field. So if they can do it, you know, why can't the British coaches?
Fair point. So you're going away win, you're going draw, Matt. I'm going draw as well. Let's turn our attention to QPR against Burton. I love Burton. I really do. I don't know how they got in the second division, but I can't see them winning this. I think this is a QPR win. What do you think?
I'll go for a home win.
Yeah, Matt?
Yeah, home win.
OK, we're fairly unanimous on that one. Leeds United doing so well up until Saturday. They are at home to Ipswich. Alex, what do you reckon?
I actually, the big wily Mick McCarthy, I go for a draw.
Ah, really? Matt?
I think Leeds will bounce back with a win here, actually. I think they should have Liam Cooper back, so I think that'll help them.
OK, I'm backing Leeds. I don't understand how they were so bad against Millwall. Every time I've seen them this season, they've been excellent. So let's just put that down as a one-off. Next up on the slip is Sheffield Wednesday, Sheffield United. Which one of those teams is coming back to the Premier League first, do you think?
Sheffield Wednesday.
Really? There's been some concerns from the fans about Carlos Carvalho.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's any time soon, but I would think that they would be favourites, although, you know, Sheffield United have certainly raised a few eyebrows with the performances and the league position this season, and they've been very consistent. So I think all the credit to the gaffer and the team that he's built there.
Can you see either one going up anytime soon? Is it not quite their time yet?
I don't see it anytime soon. I don't see it this season, but Sheffield Wednesday I've spent a few bob to try and reach that goal.
Alex, what do you reckon here?
Go for a draw.
A draw? Safe bet?
Yes.
I'm going Wednesday win. I think Sheffield United will be a bit rattled by that defeat against Norwich. Matt?
I'm going to join Alex on the fence, I think, with this one.
Okay. And there is one more on the slip. Aston Villa against Nottingham Forest.
Home win.
Home win? You think Bruce has turned it around?
I just believe that Steve will be drumming into the guys that we've had that fantastic victory last week. Let's not spoil it with a dismal result at home again. But, you know, Mark Warburton started the season reasonably well for Forest also, but a goal for Villa just... having that wee bit of momentum of that victory last week.
They're having a bit of a wobble there, Forrest. Another one of your former clubs,
yes,
of course.
Yes, yes.
Very
short briefly. Short spell.
Yeah, before you, you felt something was up, didn't you?
Yeah. It was, there was one or two things that were against my principles, and certainly in terms of contractual as well. So, it just wasn't the right one at the end of the day. And then when I didn't get the transfer targets and deadline day, you kind of get the feeling that it's not going to work here.
Matt, Aston Villa Forest?
Yeah, I think Villa will win again.
Yeah, I am in complete agreement. Okay, that is Fan League. All you have to do is just add the remaining Premier League predictions to that. Doesn't take very long at all. And you can win cash prizes. It depends how many you get right and how many people are playing. But 10 is usually enough to get you on the board. 11 will get you lots of money. 12 will probably make a considerable difference to your holiday plans. And, well, I don't think anyone's got 13 yet, and no one in this room is likely to, I fear. If you want to play Fan League with us, just download the app. It's called Fan League. And when you've done that, search for me, Ian McIntosh, and I will invite you to join the Totally Football League. You'll be able to play against us every week. You'll be able to see how well or how badly we're doing. Sadly, that's all we've got time for on the Championship. Following the maxim that we barely even play by our own rules, it's time for League Two.
Do you know how much we like the Football League paper here at the Totally Football League Show? We like them so much that we're going to do a sort of Barcelona UNICEF thing where we advertise them, and instead of taking their money, we're going to give them money instead. £1.50 every week, because that's how much we like it. Every single Football League game has its own report. Every single one. Imagine putting that together on a Saturday night. And yet, it's always in the shops first thing Sunday morning. The Football League paper, £1.50. Buy it. It's really, really good.
Do not ask for whom the bell tolls. I'll tell you, it tolls for Michael Brown, sacked by Port Vale, and Gary Caldwell, sacked by Chesterfield. Those two are hand in hand and tits deep in the Brown stuff at the bottom of League Two. At the top, well, we'll talk about Exeter in a moment, but a word for Kevin Nolan's Notts County, who beat Harry Keel's Crawley on Saturday. They're in second. Who are Accrington Stanley? They're the team in third, thanks to that era-ending win at Chesterfield. It was a bad day at the office for Michael Flynn's Newport. He was furious at the manner of their defeat at Morecambe, and no wonder. But who had a worse day? I take no pleasure at all in telling you it was Colchester, who lost 3-1 to Cheltenham, and a long season awaits for both of those, I think. But today, we're going to be having a look at Exeter. What do you need to know? They've never played in the top two divisions. They kind of invented the Brazilian national team, the first team to play against them. And they went financially kaboom in spectacular fashion in the 1990s before tumbling out of the Football League in 2003. However, they were saved by the Supporters Trust. They hired Paul Tisdale in 2006. They returned to League Two in 2008, bounced straight up to League One in 2009, and slipped back again in 2012. But now they're on the up again. They're doing very well. Matt, it's quite a change, because if we'd have done this show this time last year, we wouldn't be having this conversation, would we?
No, we wouldn't, Ian. This time last year, they were struggling towards the bottom of the table. They hadn't won at home since April, and that was one of only two home wins in a calendar year there. So, the Supporters Trust said to the club that they thought Paul Tisdale should serve his notice on his contract, and they were looking really to make a change down the line. And then straight after that, they went on a 12-game unbeaten run. So, yeah, they turned it around pretty quickly.
And they followed that run-up for the rest of the season. They ended up in the playoffs. They went to Wembley, and there they were beaten by Blackpool, which rather ruins the story. I guess
Yeah, the fans, could they really be blamed? Because they were really bad, weren't they? They were 23rd.
They were bad. I think it was the home form that was the biggest complaint, and they'd been bad at home for a couple of years. And yeah, it was not the first time that Tisdale was under a bit of pressure, actually, because in 2014 it was actually a petition from a group of fans asking for him to leave, asking either the club to sack him or for Tisdale to resign. And obviously he's been there for 11 years now, so I think they hoped that he would fall upon his sword and go back in 2014. But then, yeah, he managed to stabilise the situation there as well. I don't think the petition actually got the 100,000 votes it needed to be debated in Parliament. I think it was just just the 400-odd votes there.
Did you sense it was the kind of thing, you know, from a vocal minority rather than a widespread thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I spoke to Exeter fan Gary Andrews, actually, who said it very much is a vocal minority, and a lot of people understand the vision and the long-term focus that Tisdale has on developing a good football-playing young team at Exeter, and yeah, they're starting to bear the fruits of that labour.
They've got some very decent players there. Alex, you must have come across Lee Holmes, who was under-19 England captain. He played for Derby at the age of 15. I know Matt and I will disagree on this, but he was the player that stuck out for me.
Yeah, he's been on the cusp of some bigger teams in years gone by, but you know, he's now playing at that level, and he's an outstanding player. He's definitely a player who ticks the boxes and gets the team going, and he's, again, a player with great experience.
And on a technical level, he's head and shoulders above a lot of people in that division, isn't he?
Yeah, tremendous. And Paul Tisdale wants to play in a technical way. He's been very assured on that over the years. He hasn't wavered. And that's why I'd like to go down and watch his team playing someday.
I'll tell you what does stand out about Exeter, probably because Paul Tisdale's been there for 11 years. Every single player who started the game for Exeter made at least 20 appearances for the first team last season. There's so much stability there. Does that really help when you're a manager, Alex?
Yeah, absolutely. The stability and consistency of the team. And I know that there's the problem nowadays for a lot of coaches is to try and rotate the team and to make sure a lot of players get game time. I went 14 games unbeaten at Birmingham, and the team just kept rolling on. I said, look, it's difficult to change the team, guys. You know, players chapping on my door, when am I going to get a game? I said, maybe when we stop winning. And we had such a good run that it was 14 games without changing a single player in the team.
Now, with Paul Tisdale, he's obviously attracted quite a lot of attention while he's been there. He's turned down jobs, we believe, at Swansea and Southampton in the past. Is that wise for a manager to not take the opportunities? Because I always go back to Steve Tilson at Southend, who was offered pretty much every job in the Championship and turned them all down out of loyalty and then got sacked.
Well, it depends on the individual. Yeah, Paul probably get good reasons for doing that and shunning those opportunities. But as a player, I played 18 years at Aberdeen. I had a few chances to go to England. There weren't agents in those days who kicked the door down of the manager. I also had the influence of Alec Ferguson to face when I was coming to talk about contracts. He famously told me and Willie Miller we were bleeding the club dry, and he gave me an extra tenner a week. So I thought, put it there, boss. That's a brilliant deal.
That's a good reward for beating Real Madrid.
Yeah. So when I went into management, I vowed to take an opportunity to go to a higher club if that opportunity came. And that's the way my career kind of unfolded a little bit so far. Stagnated a wee bit at the moment, but hopefully I can get back in again.
You've had an interesting time, haven't you? You've been away in Egypt.
Egypt and Belgium. I coached abroad. There were two teams that had half a chance of winning, achieving something. And, you know, to be honest, it pretty much galvanised them into having good seasons. So, you know, 54% win ratio at Genk and 60-odd at Zamalek in Egypt. So wasn't too bad.
But you're eager to get back now. Is there any particular level you're going for? You're just looking for the right kind of job?
Yeah, I'd like a good challenge. A challenge where I had half a chance of winning. Listen, it doesn't have to be Premier League. It could be a team that has a really good chance of promotion and somebody with my experience that I can help them.
Well, Exeter certainly have a very good chance of promotion, so I'm not sure there'll be a vacancy there for a minute. They are 3 points clear of second place Notts County, but they are 8 points clear of Luton in the playoffs, which is a real margin you want to worry about. Go see them play. It's quite a journey if you're here, definitely. But a good journey. Very nice train line. You can get the train to Exeter St David's and then get train from there to St James's Park. It's a lovely train journey. By car, don't do it. They won't appreciate it because they're proud to be the first professional club to voluntarily develop travel plans to help fans travel to the ground by more sustainable means. Tickets aren't bad, though. Cheapest adult match day tickets, £16 or £17 on the day. If you're a away fan, also £16. A fiver for under 16s and free for under 11s. OK, gentlemen. When we come back, we'll be moving to League One for a very interesting story developing in the University Heartlands. It's still mad in League One. Shrewsbury, they're 5 points clear at the top after beating bottom side Oldham. Not bad for a team that was fighting relegation last season, is it? It's a three-way tussle for second with Peterborough, who drew with Walsall, Bradford, who beat Rotherham, and Blackpool, who did something most unsavoury to Oxford. But more on that in a bit. Matt, what did Blackburn do?
We lost 1-0 at home to AFC Wimbledon after winning four games on a bounce.
This is going to be fun, this show, isn't it?
Yeah.
Southend, they were 2-0 down to Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank's Northampton at half-time. They hauled it back to 2-2, but they still haven't won a game since the opening day of the season. Matt, who did Southend beat on the opening day of the season?
I can't remember, actually.
No, I can help you. Anyway, let's have a look at Oxford. What do you need to know about Oxford? Well, if you're under the age of 40, you may not realise that they were not only a top-flight team, but they won the League Cup in 1986. Only great managers win the League Cup, isn't that right, Alex?
Correct. I can remember that as well.
Sadly, they were relegated in 1988 under one Mark Lawrenson, and they haven't been back since. There are all sorts of fascinating Robert and Kevin Maxwell-related stories about their demise, but we haven't got time or the lawyers for that. The financial collapse, though, was miserable. It culminated in their relegation to non-league in 2006. But hey, like Exeter, they came back. They won the playoffs against York in 2010. Michael Appleton took them up to League One in 2016, but he left last year to become the assistant manager at Leicester. Oxford, though, turned to Pep Clotet, inspiration, tactical superbrain and hitherto right-hand man of Gary Monk. It all looks very exciting, but Matt, it's not as simple as it looks, is it?
Well, they've been going really well so far. I think the Blackpool game was a bit of a blip at the weekend. They lost 3-1 and they were 2-0 down after 15 minutes and, yeah, they took a while to get started and definitely this was one fixture where the style didn't pay off.
Matt and I watched the tape of this game in a CAF yesterday where the CAF owner was, I think it was Classic FM he was playing, and it was movie soundtracks. And most of this game we watched to the Star Wars and the Back to the Future soundtrack, which is, I can recommend as a really good way of watching football. Makes everything seem exciting. No, it went horribly wrong. It didn't go that great 3 days earlier. I watched a tape of them against Bradford, where a 94th-minute equaliser cost them 3 points. But it's a fascinating choice, isn't it? Because the style of football is very progressive and very expansive. Goalkeeper always rolls it out from the back. Midfielders ping off in all directions. They've got the little mini Messi, Jack Payne, in the number 10 role. Is it, Alex, possible to play that sort of football in the lower leagues and get away with it?
Certainly, if you have the players, then you would think that quality would shine through in the end, and that would be a factor. But if they would need to not be bullied in games, they would need to have some amount of strength, possibly in the back four, also a back four who can use the ball. So, but I tried to be expansive with Hibs. I had two centre halves. Big John Hughes, Sean Dennis. They weren't the most cultured players in the world, and I tried to do the expansive stuff many, many years ago, and they passing the ball between themselves, in the edge of the box, lost the ball, free kick, edge of the box, gave away a free kick, Aberdeen scored direct from the free kick and we were out of the cup, and that's it. I said, right, you two.
Do you get to a point as a manager where you just think, you know what, let's just set it up not to go horribly wrong?
We played it, yeah, we played more practically with the guys after that, and we had a very successful season.
Matt, Oxford could have done with a little bit more pragmatism, couldn't they? I mean, there were numerous occasions we were stopping the tape in the CAF and pointing at Mike Williamson and the shielding two midfielders, one of whom kept wandering off. Can they go up like that based on what you've seen?
I think they're in that stage now where they've got to transition to Pep Clodet's ideas, and I think he signed players with a lot of experience in the Football League, like Mike Williamson, Jonathan Abeka came in from Swindon, James Henry's a great signing. And you know, I think he's looking for those players to help really, like, you know, stabilise the team and make sure that they don't you know, slip too far down. But really, you know, is Mike Williamson going to be able to play a high line? Is he going to be able to defend the central ground while the fullbacks split wide to the edge of the pitch and look to receive the ball? You know, I think it's a bit of a challenge there. And he's looked to bring in a few of his own men as well as Pep Clatet. There was a few people that he worked with when he was at Malmo and they won the league in 2010. He was assistant to Roland Nielsen there. And he signed three players from that group: Egon Mometi, Ricardinho, the fullback, and Ivo Pekalski, who injured himself in his first training session. And he's out until next year now. And a few of those players have Champions League experience with Malmo as well. So I think Ricardinho actually played in a 2-0 defeat to Juventus in the group stage, which is not as bad as a 3-1 defeat at Blackpool.
No.
When I was in Belgium for that season as well, there was a team called Leersa, maybe in the second division just now. But they had a coach who promoted the beautiful game, and they passed the pants off you. You know, but they were very, very small, and in the end, they were overpowered. They were relegated that season. But, you know, the fair play to the coach who stuck to his principles. But it was a team of small players.
Did you have fun when you were out in Belgium? Did you enjoy
it? I loved it. Yeah, it was great. It was a transitional period for Genk. They never spent any money on bringing anybody in while I was there. They said we have to sell first. Transitional period for them financially as well.
You signed someone though, didn't you? $70,000.
Ndidi.
Wilfred Ndidi.
Wilfred Ndidi. Well, Wilfred, you know, he should have been in the system. He was already on trial the season before, and the chief scout, who didn't really communicate with the sporting director, came to me and he said, "Look, coach, they're dragging their heels on this young guy that we had in trial from Africa last year, and Wilfred Ndidi," and he showed me a little bit in video. I saw how quick he was, you know, just 17, 18 year old. And I said, "Well, what's he going for?" And he said, "About €100,000. I said, "Well, surely he's worth it just for that speed. I'm sure we could hone the raw edges from him." And he was playing immediately for me. So we signed him, we took it to a board meeting and said, "Look, you're going to lose this guy if you don't go for him." He was going to be free in the January. So the sporting director put his hand up, said, yeah, he's for nothing. Just get him signed. So I don't claim to have spotted him, but certainly they may have lost him. I think that was significant. And now...
But it was your nod, your money, $70,000 it cost. How much did it go for?
I think he went for $15 million, did he? Yeah,
$15 million
to Leicester. I know. I should have became his agent.
I got to say, going back to Oxford, it is going to be very difficult to play that kind of football. That's no reason why it won't work, obviously. And if I lived anywhere near Oxford, I would absolutely go and watch that football team play. And here's how I get there. Did you like that link? It was seamless. You didn't even notice it happening. Oxford Station, unfortunately, it's a good 4 miles from the stadium. I'm not sure a 4 mile walk can ever be considered good. However, there are 2,000 parking spaces if you're taking the car, and it's quite good if you're the anxious type and you worry about leaving your car somewhere new, because there are only 3 sides to the Kassam Stadium, so you can actually keep an eye on it during the game. So that's always handy. There is a park and ride service near the city centre. Cheapest adult tickets are £22 or £20 if you're in the family area, but under sevens are free. So if you're anywhere near Oxford, go watch them. They are a very interesting team. OK, well, that's just about all we've got time for. Going forward, though, we want to know about your club. We want to know what you think about the show, whether we should send Matt to come see you and do a feature on you. So get in touch, and you know how to get in touch, don't you? You get in touch on Twitter, at The Totally Show, or you get in touch on Facebook, at The Totally Football Show, or, you know, via our respective Twitter accounts and handles and such like. If you've enjoyed the show, please remember to rate us, review us, subscribe to us, tell your friends about us, because you won't be able to legitimately moan about a lack of Football League coverage if some Football League coverage comes along and you don't subscribe to it. That's how we get the advertisers, and that's how we continue to pay Matt the £5 he gets every week he comes into the studio. Now, there is some live football on TV that's coming up this weekend. On Saturday, you can watch Aston Villa Nottingham Forest. We spoke about it earlier. That's on at 5:30 on Sky Sports Football. And on Sunday at 1:15, it's a Sheffield derby at Hillsborough on Sky Sports Football again. That's 1:15. Thank you so much for coming in, Alex. It's been great to have you here.
Thanks. Thanks for inviting me. It's great.
Matt, you've been wonderful.
Thanks, Ian.
And you've been wonderful too, dear listener. We'll see you again next week. Thank you very much for listening.